Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Folks, it is Season 6, Episode 66. 666, and that's pretty much what it was like yesterday for the Steelers yesterday at M&T Bank Stadium as they fall to the Baltimore Ravens and don't eliminate themselves from the playoff picture, but certainly no longer control their own fate. Not only do they have to beat the Cleveland Browns, they have to have a couple other things go their way potentially to get into the playoffs. Dave, that is a crushing defeat, and I think it's probably in the conversation for the worst in the Mike Tomlin era.
Yeah, and I wrote about this that very thing this morning, David, and it's really hard not to term that loss Sunday as the single worst loss in the Mike Tomlin era. Look at all the factors involved here for starters. I mean, the playoff implications, late season playoff implications. You're playing a 4-10 team, right?
Yep.
That you were favored by at least 10 points at one point during the week to beat. You're playing a team that offensively started a quarterback in Ryan Mallett against you that signed less than 2 weeks ago. They had a receiving unit that I'm willing to bet none of those three guys were drafted in everybody's fantasy leagues. They started a running back in Buck Allen that I'm not sure many people can tell you where he went to college at, and it was a debacle.
And I think it goes on from there. I mean, thanks to Alex for filling in a couple over the Christmas holiday. I've been trying to get my voice back here, and I am in full throat today. And Dave, you know, I didn't get a chance to opine on this game, and the one thing I said during the week on my show was, the defense still has some pedigree, and it scares me a little bit. But if you're going to give me a side of the ball, have it be the defense, because the Steelers' offense is so good. And look, there's no doubt this is a team loss. This goes offense, defense, coaching staff. I mean, everybody shares in the blame. But let's start where it falls, and this one falls first and foremost on Ben Roethlisberger. He had one of the worst games of his career. Certainly he didn't play well when he came back from the injury against the Bengals in that game in Pittsburgh. But this was a really bad effort from Ben Roethlisberger. And, Dave, you knew it almost from the jump. I mean, this from the very beginning, Steelers moved the ball offensively on the ground. First three plays, 46 yards for D'Angelo Williams. He only threw one pass in that opening drive, and that was to Jesse James for a three-yard gain. But from there, it really didn't look good for Ben. And I kind of, in my quick thoughts that, you know, will be up on Twitter shortly, I kind of cataloged the throws. And it was a slew of bad throws, starting with missing Marcus Wheaton after the touchdown was overturned on a 3rd and 5. It was a bad throw behind him. Then his next throw is the throw to Will Johnson down the left sideline that Jimmy Smith should have picked off. Then he does get picked off on the next drive by Darryl Smith. The second interception was a really bad back shoulder throw that Jimmy Smith finally got his interception on. Of course, there's the one in the end zone that goes 101 yards the other way, where the Steelers get the break of lining up offside. It was just a bad day for Ben Roethlisberger. It doesn't make him a bad QB. He's had a good season, but he was just flat out bad in this one.
Of all weeks for him to pick a week to have a clunker, he picked the worst one of all. And boy, he couldn't. You know, you go back these last three games now, and how defenses have decided to play the Steelers. They want to play, you know, two deep safeties and make Ben Roethlisberger kind of be patient and work the underneath stuff. And be quite honest with you, David, I think I think Ben got tired of being patient. He was patient in the game against the Bengals. He was fairly patient.
Until he wasn't on the last throw.
Yeah, he was fairly patient in the game against the Denver Broncos until, you know, a late bad throw in that game. And, you know, I think he got tired of being patient and taking the underneath stuff and taking the stuff that he probably should have taken over the middle of the field. Here's the deep ball stats for Roethlisberger in the game against the Ravens. Now, these include penalty plays, which are, you know, marked out as no plays in the game book. He was 2 of 12 with 2 interceptions and 2 pass interference calls on balls thrown more than 15 yards down the field during the game. While Roethlisberger did complete 4 of his 7 third down pass attempts on Sunday, only one of those catches resulted in the first down. And if you go and you circle the turnovers too, you go and you circle the third down efficiency, which they were what, 2 of, what was
two,
it, 8?
2 of 8.
2 of 8, you know? You sure better be getting turnovers on the other end from your defense and capitalizing on some short fields and with the running game in the red zone, you know, if you're going to win a ball game. And none of that happened, and it really was. I mean, look, I'm not absolving the Steelers coaching staff. I'm not absolving, you know, the way the defense played in that game.
Sure as heck, we're not going to absolve Martavis Bryant.
No, Martavis Bryant, I mean, he didn't have a good game, you know. But, I mean, the brunt of the loss has to fall on Ben Roethlisberger. It really does. If I would have told you, David, you know, last week, okay, that the Steelers will hold the Ravens to 20 points.
Easy win. I mean, maybe it's 27-20, but, no, you know, no doubt in my mind that, you know, you hold basically any team in this league with this offense, the expectation should be 20 or less gets you a win. I mean, just period, full stop.
You have an offense that scored 30 or more points in the last 6 games, some of which were against defenses that, look, I don't want to take any, I mean, the Ravens defense still has some names on it. That, you know, their offense is the unit that really took, in my opinion, the big brunt of the injuries this year. But with that being said, this was you know, a defense that should have been beat, and Roethlisberger couldn't solve it, especially with the deep ball. They got themselves in some precarious, you know, situations. And look, even as bad as the defense played, how many points in the game from you know, the second half on, did the Steelers' offense get the ball back with only, you know, only down 3 points?
Yeah, look, you know, the defense, and we'll get to the defense, but yeah, no doubt the offense. You know, you felt like, okay, after they get the, you know, it's 13-10, then it's 20-10, and then it's 20-17. The offense had the ball a couple different shots, and they couldn't move the football. And they didn't, you know, they never got in field goal range. It's not like they turned it over in field goal range and had a chance to tie the game. They didn't get it done moving the ball. And there are a couple things to talk about here as we get into the larger scope of the offense. One is, and this is going to be questioned, and I think it's a fair question. I don't have a great answer to it. Why did the Steelers come out and try to run the football, which they did effectively? Let's make sure that that's understood. In that opening drive and in that first quarter, they moved the football and they moved it on the ground. D'Angelo Williams had 8 carries for 80 yards in the first quarter. I mean, that's, you know, come on, you just extrapolate it out. I mean, that's monster stuff, 10 yards a carry. Obviously, the first 3 carries of the game, 46 yards. But the question is, why, you know, that hasn't been the Steelers' identity here in this run. It's been throwing the football. So was it, hey, this is what they're giving us, and so we're going to take it? Or was there something else going on there? And, I think that's fair to question, you know, because Ben never got in rhythm. Was there something going on there? Is there a reason he didn't get in rhythm? Was it because they didn't throw the football, you know, much in those first 2 drives? He didn't look like he had that. And look, with Antonio Brown, it's almost like it's psychic between those 2 guys, or it has felt that way this year, and it didn't look that way at all. Now, one of the things that Jimmy Smith said after the game was, you know, we were going to take Antonio Brown out of the game. Okay, well, that's the Seattle template. That worked. They, you know, Richard Sherman did a good job of shutting down Antonio Brown. But my goodness, Marcus Wheaton went off for 200 yards. The other guys had big days. What happened with these guys? I think it's a group. They had 11 catches for, you know, 120 yards or something like that. They were invisible. The shallow crosses weren't there. That's been a staple. The middle of the field wasn't really there. Heath was not a big factor in this one. I don't know what happened to the Steelers passing game in this one. And so I'll tip my hat to the Baltimore defense and John Harbaugh, but I will also at the same time be critical of Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin for not figuring this thing out.
Well, first of all, I have no problems when you're running the football at 6.7 yards a clip, you know, to do just that like they were early on in the game. But, you know, they didn't make key throws when they had to have them, you know, especially the third down plays. And then, I mean, let's not even get into the early fourth and short. You know, I mean, what a debacle that. I hate pulling those guards on short plays.
Why are you pulling Foster? I mean,
why not go the other way?
Yeah, pull DeCastro. I mean, look, DeCastro and Cody Wallace got blown up by Brandon Williams, and then they push him back, and then Foster trips, and a handoff 7 yards deep. I mean, it just didn't look like any of the plays they had run to that point in time, and it just didn't feel right, as you say, to be pulling the guards there, and particularly to be pulling DeCastro. I mean, pulling Foster.
Yeah, and you know, even though Roethlisberger had most, his highest percentage of completion rates, I think was on short passes over the middle. He didn't. I don't think he exploited that area of the field enough. I don't think they did enough, you know, quick slants in this game. You know, trying to get Antonio Brown and some yak in some certain situations. Martavis Bryant was pretty much invisible throughout the entire game. Well, heck, his one catch in the game was what? A screen pass, right? To the left side for 6 yards?
Martavis Bryant, yeah.
Martavis Bryant?
Yeah, instead of taking up the sideline, he cut it back inside. That was it. It's the only ball he caught, and he had that one run play for 4 yards where, you know, I'm not knocking him here, but he kind of ducked out of bounds rather than taking a hit. Okay, no big deal. But those are the only two times he touched the ball.
And was the offensive line pass protection great for the Steelers? No, not. I mean, it surely wasn't perfect, but it was good enough at times in that game to at least have a short rhythmic passing game. And I think that might be the key word there, that the Roethlisberger never got into rhythm with his receivers, especially in the short passing game. And maybe that's perhaps because he wasn't in rhythm passing early on in the game, coming out and running so often. But on the flip side, I don't reprimand them for gaining. I mean, you work something until it doesn't work anymore. You know, 6.7 yards per clip early on in the game. Did they maybe panic a little bit when they got down, I don't know, 10 to 3, you know, 13 to 3? You know, by the time that happened, it was kind of late. What, Tucker hit his 50-yard field goal with like 1:17 left in the half. So, you know, there was a lot of football between them going up 10 to 3, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe they weren't patient. Maybe they abandoned the running game a little bit too soon, you know, to take some of that pressure off, because it just looked like Ben was bound and determined to try to throw deep on the Ravens, and that's something that he didn't do in the previous two games. Very controlled, very methodical, and look, they didn't even run the ball well against the Broncos, you know?
Right, they didn't run the ball at all.
And, you know, and of course the defense pitched a shutout in the second half. That helped matters, but you know they overcame a 17-point deficit in that game. It was just all off right from the get-go. But once again, like I said, I don't fault them from running early, but perhaps maybe them running early took away from the Roethlisberger passing game rhythm.
Yeah, and that's the only that would be my question as well. It's just amazing to see this offense move the ball as easily as it did in the second half against Denver, and then come out against this defense and not be able to find the receivers at all. You know, not find the middle of the field. And, you know, you wonder if, you know, Ben throwing that interception, the first interception that Daryl Smith picked off, if all of a sudden he got gun shy, which wouldn't, you know, maybe you don't think about that, but if Ben got gun shy about using the kind of intermediate middle of the field, because Dave, just thinking about it, I can't think of him going back there too many more times. And against Denver, he exploited that repeatedly. with AB and with some other guys going across the middle. Now, if you're playing more man, it's easier to do that stuff. But boy, it was a poor offensive performance. I mean, really, and let's just get to what everybody wants to get to is on the last drive, taking the two shots deep. You've got 3rd and 15 after Ben takes the sack on second down, and you know, they take the shot deep to Martavis Bryant. I'm just going to say, look, Martavis Bryant's had a disappointing season in my eyes. He's missed 5 games, 4 to suspension, 1 to injury. The stats look okay. His yards per catch is up over 15, so that, you know, that's a hefty number. But, man, will he make a tough catch one of these days? I mean, I've talked now for the last 3 games. He's had 4 balls in the end zone, all incredibly tough catches. But, you know, you expect him to pull in 1 or 2 of these now and then. And the – look, I'm just, he should have caught that ball. He's fallen down. I understand it, but it hits him basically in the chest. I mean, he's there. It's, you know, it's right on his arms. That's a game-changing play. It's a season-changing play, and he didn't make it. And on the next play, I've watched it a couple times. I'll have to watch it again. I don't know if the defender tipped the ball that they threw to Wheaton on the other side, but it hit Wheaton right in the shoulder pad. I mean, you know, it's, again, a tough catch, and the guy's got his hand up there, so you're doing different things. But, man, you know, as bad as Ben was, you know, it'd be nice to see a receiver make a play other than Antonio Brown. And Martavis Bryant, he has not made a play in a while.
Well, you know, Martavis did have, what, the 10 catches against Denver and caught one of those contested balls, right, against Aqib Talib in the game. So there were some positive signs coming out of that Denver game as it relates to him. But I'm with you. I mean, yes, he was. That's what's going to separate him as a great receiver.
Absolutely.
Versus just a deep threat. You know, right now, he's not the completely the one trick pony that Mike Wallace was, but you know he doesn't always body catch the way Mike Wallace does. But until he starts making the catch of the game, I guess is the best way to
a highlight catch. Let's see a highlight.
Right. Boy, Martavis Bryant. Boy, those two. You know, until we start talking about him making those highlight catches instead of Antonio Brown, he's not going to be considered, you know, an elite receiver. I mean, he's going to be a guy that can stretch the field and haul in the home run ball when he has 2 steps on a defender. But yeah, I mean, falling down. What a difference that, you know, you hate to boil this thing down to one play, you know, but I mean, you can go back through every game, it seems like, and circle 1 or 2 plays and say, man, you know, you make a play there, that's a difference in the game.
Yeah.
And how big would that have catch been? What, it,
you're
like
in
a
field goal, right?
14, you know, something like that. I mean, you're talking really, you could change everything at that point, and it's just one play late in the ball game. As far as him going, as far as the pass on the other side, I've tried to slow that thing down, David, and zoom it, the pass to Marcus Wheaton, and it does look like that thing's tipped. So, you know, but even then, you know, great receivers adjust, you know, can come up with that catch, you know. So,
did you mind the play call?
Well, I'm not sure I would have tried to have eaten the elephant in one bite.
Yeah.
On 3rd and long, because you know it's 4 down territory, right?
You know, I got to say on 3rd down, you know, we've seen them live with this. This is who they are. They're not afraid to go deep, and you know maybe you catch them. So, I kind of like the call on 3rd down. On 4th down, then you're stuck, right? So you know if you do that, if you take the, you know, that's what you live with. If you don't get it, then you're stuck with it again. And, you know, you saw, you know, we saw kind of how the patterns developed. But, I mean, he was going where he was going. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really read the defense. It's, is your receiver going to beat his man?
I would have tried to take in a smaller bite of an elephant, I think. You know, I'd much rather face a 4th and 8.
Sure.
You know, of course, I mean, you connect on one of those and we're talking about what a great play call and what a great decision it was to go deep on 3rd or 4th, you know, on 3rd down. So, I mean, they just out of sync. That offense was out of sync the whole game. Like I said, the offensive line wasn't great in the game by any stretch of the imagination, but the offensive line played good enough to win, and the protection was good enough especially to have a short rhythmic passing game, which, oh, by the way, that's pretty much what the Baltimore Ravens did against the Steelers.
Right. Okay, so let's get to the other side of the ball. And goodness gracious, can you make an adjustment before halftime? I mean, you talk about what happened coming out of that, you know, look, it's a joke that Baltimore can go 75 yards, including a 10-yard intentional grounding penalty on the opening drive. They go 15 plays. They convert four third downs. The Steelers are getting gouged by the outside zone. They're getting gouged by the power running game, which they're attacking Ryan Shazier because he can't shed interior linemen. So that makes sense. So they're not really stopping the run.
Don't forget Will Allen's six missed tackles missed tackles.
I was going to get to that on the second drive. But, you know, and right, they don't tackle, and they're going to give them the underneath stuff. This is Ryan Mallett. He's been with the team 12 days. You don't think he's looking for the underneath stuff? Give him all he wants over the top here early in the game. Take away the underneath stuff. Play some press coverage. Do some of that. They didn't do it. And it's just, I mean, you want to talk about stuff that gets infuriating. I keep going back to games in the Dick LeBeau era when, you know, that's all quarterbacks are just going to take stuff. As you pointed out, Dave, he's been there 12 freaking days. I mean, how much of the playbook does he have? He's going to throw the sideline, the outs. He's going to throw the stuff over the middle. They're going to throw. They like to throw to the fullback, but that's been a staple of their offense for years. They're going to go to that, and it's not checking down. That's what the play design is. And you know, the Steelers couldn't stop it on the opening two drives. 26 plays on the first two drives, and yeah, I mean, look, in the second drive, missed. You know, the first play of the second drive, Shamarco Thomas makes a guest appearance, goes flying by. The handoff, and Will Allen is there in run support to make the tackle at the line of scrimmage, completely whiffs. I don't think he touches him, and the play goes for 14 yards. Later on the drive on a third and four, Blake's got a chance on the sideline to make a tackle to, you know, short of the sticks, have him punt. They get the first down. They end up kicking a field goal. It's a three-point missed tackle. I mean, the first two drives of that game were an embarrassment for that defense.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that one bit. The personnel that this defense has, they really can't do more than play zone underneath. You know, they don't, you know, people want these corners to play up, but they don't have the pass rush to be able to play trail. You know, man coverage,
right,
in my opinion.
Right.
You know, you're going to get beat over deep, over the top deep, or you're going to be the wide receivers are going to get separation off the line, against corners that are not best suited to play one-on-one press type situations there. But it is infuriating knowing exactly where certain players are going to be on the field at the snap of the football, maybe sans which one of the defensive lineman or an outside linebacker might drop into coverage, you know? It really is frustrating. The mentality of, well, don't get beat deep has just resulted in getting beat a lot underneath.
Get beat all the time underneath and up the seam because they can't cover a seam route for their life.
Yeah, I mean, look at that first touchdown that the Ravens scored.
It was a good throw by Mallett. I'll give him that.
Yeah, but quarters coverage, I mean, it looked like, we'll see what the All-22 says, looks like quarters coverage, which is four members of your secondary each covering a deep portion, you know, trying to keep the play in front of them in a quarter portion of the field, and the wide receiver just splits Mitchell and Allen, and those two are responsible for the middle quarters of the field. You know, both of them just standing there dumbfounded, it looked like, as a receiver just splits them. And yes, it was a great throw, but, I mean, he had plenty of room, in my opinion.
Oh, and we've seen him get just toasted on this repeatedly. I mean, happened in the Denver game, happened in the Seattle game. I mean, it's just time after time after time. And we finally have seen them make the adjustment to go to, you know, five and six defensive backs. I mean, it's taken, you know, it took them 12, 13 weeks into the season to start that move, getting Timmons off the field. But, man, this is a disastrously bad pass defense. And you said it. You tweeted it again last night. So, look, you know, for whatever hopes you have for this team and how, you know, how good the offense is, I mean, this isn't remotely close to a championship caliber defense. Doesn't mean that they can't win games. Doesn't mean if they made the playoffs that they couldn't have a run. It's just their defense is bad. I mean, it's bad. And I think we've tried to talk about this, but let's talk about it a little more, because I went on a kind of, you know, rampage on Twitter last night myself about just not nearly enough blame is being put on the linebackers. Look, we know the DBs are bad. They're just bad. I mean, it's, you know, they're not great players. But I don't know that we've said enough about the linebacking core being bad. The four edge guys are non-existent. I mean, in this game, they had two quarterback hits. One was the questionable low hit by Harrison. And then there was one other one. And they had one pass defense. Jarvis Jones knocked a pass down at the line of scrimmage, which was a decent play. They did nothing else. There were no sacks by any of the front seven. The only sack came from Boykin. They didn't get much pressure on Mallett. And this has been the case. Even though the sack numbers look okay, it's the sacks have come off schemes, and a lot of them are coming from DBs. You know, the Steelers are getting pressure, having to bring extra guys. They have not had a dominant edge rusher since Lamar Woodley got hurt in 2011. They haven't had a guy who can just – you put on the edge and you say, go get him, and he's going to get there.
That fateful game against the New England Patriots, which started the demise of Lamar Woodley, that was about the line in the sand right then.
Yep.
And how many years ago is that?
2011.
Has that been? David, the outside linebackers this season have recorded 14 sacks this season, okay? Of those 14, five of them, I believe, have come in the fourth quarter when the game is totally in hand.
Right, three by Harrison in that fourth quarter against the Colts.
And one by Moats in that same game, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that leaves you with, let's do some math here, 14 minus 5, carry the 1, add 6 plus 2, that's 9, right?
Okay.
So 9 sacks from your outside linebackers in meaningful playing time, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. Last year, 19 sacks by the outside linebacker group. 2013, 14 sacks by the outside linebacker group. 2012, 15 sacks. Seeing a common theme here for the most part. Luckily Jason Worlds was around in 2014 to help a little bit with those numbers. 2011, 21 sacks.
And that's when Woodley had double fee. I think he had 10 and a half that year and around that number. And that's when he got hurt. He missed a bunch of games.
And 2010, the last time they went to the Super Bowl, right? 22 and a half sacks by the outside linebackers. We're going to have all offseason to break down the play of Bud Dupree and what he did. But, you know, I'm willing to, however that tape stacks up, which is not going to be pretty, I'm willing to give him the rookie pass, okay? Even though his ceiling is probably not great. But the rest of them, this Anthony Ciccolo included, this just isn't magically going to get better. So, you know, what does that tell you? I mean, are you really going to bring James Harrison back now, you know, regardless of whether he paid you to play?
It's exactly what I was thinking last night. There's no chance you can bring James Harrison back. I don't care what leadership he brings. Absolutely not. See ya. Thanks for coming. Great player. Ring of Honor, whatever the, you know, Steelers want, however they want to honor him for his, you know, commitment to the team and his play. But he's gone. You give him the Troy handshake. Thanks for coming.
Okay, now Jarvis Jones, who is your other guy on the right side, you're going to have to decide early on in the offseason whether or not to pick up his fifth-year option. In my opinion, you know what? Being as how that's not guaranteed until the start of the next calendar season, I'd go ahead and pick up that option.
What is it, $8 million?
It's going to be between $8 and $9 million probably. I'd go ahead and pick that up just to keep the carrot dangling over his head.
Yeah, if it's not
because you can rip,
then who cares?
Right, because you can rip it out from, you know, it's only guaranteed from injury only. as far as that goes. So, you know, you're just going to – my thought is just keep a big, giant carrot hanging over his head, because what does it say to Jarvis Jones if you don't pick up his option?
Yeah, no.
Even though we know they probably shouldn't,
right.
And we know what they're saying anyway behind closed doors. Okay, so, I mean, look, he's never going to be a double-digit. If he's a double-digit sack guy in this league, it's not going to be with the Steelers. I'll tell you that. I'm pretty sure about that. And we kind of knew this coming out of the draft with him. Okay, enough about bashing him. Arthur Motes, you know, we didn't know a lot about Arthur Motes until he got here as far as him being a 3-4 outside linebacker. But, I mean, he is what he is. He's a bit player that's a special teams player. He's not a starter for you, one that you
– He's supposed to be a 10-player-a-game guy, not a 40-player-a-game guy.
Right, right. And then that leaves you with Bud Dupree and Anthony Ciccolo. And to Anthony Ciccolo's credit, he just hasn't played a lot this year. But, you know, you would think if there was anything there right now at this point, he would be on the field more. And then Bud Dupree is Bud Dupree, and we're just going to have to keep our fingers crossed that he can progress. But even though, you know, we haven't seen a double-digit sack guy.
No. Look, I see Bud Dupree, I see a good athlete. I don't know that I see a good football player.
So what do you do? Do you go into the draft and try to draft a couple of these guys early again? Do you try to go out and make a huge, you know, something that goes against the Steelers' grain, a huge guy? I mean, let's face it, in free agency, if you're going to get one of the top ones, it's going to cost you some money.
Yep.
You know, and it doesn't fit the Steelers' MO. So how is this magically going to get better for the outside linebacker position?
I don't know. And we've said it now for a year and a half. And I mean, we've been talking about it all year. These guys aren't good. They're just not, you know, and we haven't gotten to the inside guys yet. And I'm ready to go off on them too. But Dave, I don't have an answer. The answer is yeah. The answer is yes. You got to, you know, you're gonna have to do one of those things. And they need to hit on somebody. They need to find a guy who's a beast. And I guess if you're going to play in free agency, if there's a guy – look, we've seen a couple guys change teams and have success. So, you know, the Elvis Dumervilles of the world, and that was a very unique situation with how his contract got screwed up and all of that. But, you know, we've also seen guys miss. So, but the thing is, you have to know who fits your system. And, look, I haven't watched any tape on Howard Jones and what he's doing in Tampa. And it's a different scheme down there. But you see a guy making plays down there, and you say, okay, did the Steelers misevaluate Howard Jones? Is he just a guy who happened to be in the right spot for a couple plays in Tampa? Or is it the scheme suits him better down there? They've got to figure some of this out. And, look, I'm not going to tell you the Steelers are never going to be a 4-3 team, but they're also not magically just going to change. Maybe there is a year – but it won't be a year with Keith Butler as the defensive coordinator where they change to a 4-3. If they're going to keep the same defensive coaching staff personnel, they're going to be a 3-4 team. And they have the guys up front to play it, but they don't have the rest of the guys right now. And talk about the guys inside. Look, Lawrence Timmons has a monster cap hit next year. And you've heard me talk about Timmons and say that, you know, his play has dropped this year. There are two things going on the inside, guys. First of all, we thought they would draft Shazier to cover tight ends and carry him up the field. We've seen how much trouble Timmons has had doing that this year. The Steelers are getting beat up the seam all season by tight ends. But the question has been, why isn't Shazier the guy running with these guys? Or is it they want him closer to the line of scrimmage and he takes backs out of the backfield because he's better at going to sideline to sideline? Maybe that's the answer, because that's the only possible thing I can think of, unless it's his football IQ isn't good enough to understand what's going on in the passing game. And so I don't know what to think about the two guys on the inside now either.
Well, here's the thing. You just don't see them drop that linebacker a lot in a true cover two zone deep 18-yard drop.
Yeah.
Okay? Most of the times what you're seeing those middle linebackers do is just zone.
Right.
Right? I mean – now, here's the thing. People will go back and you'll point to the late deep ball to Jusek out of the backfield. But go back and watch that play. Shazier has to attack the line first because of the run threat. You know, if you're reading your keys, you're reading run there. And boy, once and Jusek sells it.
And he does. He looks into the backfield and he gets torched.
And then Jusek just runs right past him, you know, for a huge in another play that you could probably circle and say, boy, if Mark Trestman had one play call that you circled that may have won the game, it's probably that one, right?
Well, actually, I think it was the play before it, which and you know, I wrote about this as well. Is, you know, they get that 15-yard roughing penalty, and they get a second and 23. And look, one of the things about William Gay, who's been the Steelers' best defensive back, is he's willing to take chances. And he's a guy who will jump routes. We've seen it. That's why his five touchdowns, you know, his last five picks have been touchdowns, because he jumps stuff. And look, I like guys who do that. You have to know, but you have to know the situation in the game. And you have to know, you know, if you get beat, how you're going to get beat. Do you have help? What's going to happen? On second and 23, he's playing the out there on Givens, and he just assumes, you know, Mallett's not going to throw the ball down the field. It's not a terrible assumption. But he bites hard on that, and Givens goes right by him, and it's a really easy throw for Mallett there to hit him on the sideline. And bang, that goes for 39. Jusek's the next play. That goes for, you know, 34. And, you know, the Ravens go from second and 23 on their own 20-something to being on the Steelers' three-yard line.
Yeah, and the play that you're talking about, David, I want to see that again on the all-22 because, to me, it looked more like a true just cover two situation with, you know, with Gay having to play the underneath and release over the top. And it was just a dime heck of a throw. Deep throw into that area by Mallett. Yeah, I'm not 100. I want to see it again from the all-22 before I go pointing fingers on that, because really, I, you know, two times through the film right now, back through it, just TV tape version. I just want to see. I don't doubt what you're saying, you know, but I just want to look at that play more in depth. Now it's easy to see what happened on the play with Shazier. Shazier goes up to attack, almost like he's going to attack a block of Jusek, and he just runs right past him on the outside off of a nice kind of a play fake to that side. So in my opinion, that was one of the best calls that Mark Trestman made in that game. And specifically on the heels of one explosive play, that the one that you're talking about to, who was it, Givens, that went for big yardage there. So, I'm not so much as worried as you are about the inside linebacker backing group. However, I mean, it's evident that Timmons is on the backside of his career, and it, you know, if he's going to stay. He's going to have to work out an extension with basically no new money. He's going to have to take a Troy or a Heath Miller extension, you know, just to stay. Because if he doesn't, you just can't, you know, you can't throw new money at him and risk the cap, you know, ramifications by doing anything other than that. So he needs to get the money that he was already kind of due this year, but in order to get that, he needs to extend his contract without any new money. With that being said, you know, is Vince Williams the long term? You know, you need to decide is Vince Williams going to be your guy, you know, to replace him, or do you have to go into the draft and find another athletic, physical linebacker that you can line up next to Shazier? You know, in the coming years. So that's Sean Spence is not that guy.
No, he's probably Sean Spence is gone. The question is, can Vince Williams carry you for a year or two? I just don't know that I want to pay Lawrence Timmons $8, $9, $10 million, whatever he's due to make this coming year. I mean, I know his cap hit's like 15, so that you're right about it's got to be kind of restructured if he's back. But you know, you're going to pay him that much money.
Well, you're going to, but you're going to pay it to him on your terms. You're going to spread it out.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to get what he was scheduled to earn as a base, you know, plus a little bit more in guaranteed money for the sheer fact he's not taking any new money really on the deal. That way you can cut him after a year or 2 years if need be. So I fully expect – I don't see this team – and for those people wanting to trade Lawrence Timmons, nobody's going to trade for that salary.
Yeah, somebody was telling me that they should – he should trade Jarvis Jones. He said he's a steaming pile of blank. And he said they should trade him now. I'm like,
for what? For a couple draft picks, one person told me.
Yeah.
that they want a couple, you'd be lucky to get a piece of chicken and a cracker, you know, for Jarvis Jones, and especially, you know, going into the, you know, nobody's going to want a 1 year rental, trade for a 1 year rental
to pay him $8 million.
To pay him $8 million and pick up his option on top. No, that's not going to happen. Nobody's going to trade for Timmons and his current salary.
Nobody wants the Steelers' defensive players. Okay, period.
No,
Cam Hayward and Tua are the only guys who have value. So let's stop with the trade ideas.
And to get back to one final thing. You know, Vince Williams, we know Vince Williams plays downfield great. I mean, he always has. He played downfield great at Florida State. You just worry about him out in space.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, he surely doesn't move the way Timmons moves, and Timmons doesn't move great at this stage of his career. So, yes, overall you have to be concerned, I think, about your linebacking group top to bottom.
Cool. We took that apart in nice fashion. Let me ask you.
We haven't even gotten to the defensive backs
well,
yet.
Well, I mean, I don't even know that it's worth getting there because we torch them so regularly. But let me ask this question. This is on a specific play. Ross Cockrell makes a really nice play on the deep ball, doesn't bite at all, perfect position. You know, doesn't necessarily play the ball perfectly, but he does exactly what he has to do. He tips the ball away. Mike Mitchell comes flying over. Now, I've watched this two or three times. I don't know that Mike Mitchell can catch the ball, but maybe take a look at it. I mean, it is tipped up in the air. He's coming flying over, and he doesn't look at the ball for half a second. He just wants to clean out the receiver. Am I missing something? I mean, am I being too picky?
He definitely wanted the money shot.
Yeah. All right. So you at least saw generally what I saw.
Yeah, he went for the kill.
Okay. Good gracious. I mean.
Yeah. Let's look at these corners. Hey, might as well rip it apart. And these safeties. Will Allen, there's no way you can bring him back. I don't care if he pays you to pay. A play next year. Mike Tomlin just needs to finally cut that cord once and for all. Robert Golden, we really don't have a large enough selection of playing time to really, you know what he is and isn't. But, I mean, he, as it stands right now, he would be your starter alongside Mike Mitchell next season. Shamarco, what a mess that turned out to be.
I can't believe he was on the field. What was, well, all of a sudden he's in the rotation in week 16, or at least being considered to be in the rotation. What's going on? How week 16? You want to do this? I don't get it.
Yeah, and runs right past the ball carrier on that one. Played like two or three snaps in the game. Let's see who have we missed back there at safety. That's the four of them.
Yep.
Mitchell be back. You would think they're going to re-sign. You know, remember, Robert Golden's going to be an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I mean, I Golden kind of the same kind of money, $1.5 million a year, a 2 year, $3 million deal. I'm fine with.
Yeah, and you can bring it back for that, but I mean, you're gonna let you should let Will Allen go. Shamarco will be back in camp fighting for a training camp spot.
Yeah, Shamarco can keep around for special teams. He's not costing you a lot.
Jordan Dangerfield's on the practice squad. He's more of a special teams player than and regardless, he's a box safety anyway. You know, the one that loves to hit. I mean, what are you gonna do at safety next year? So you almost have to either draft a safety, and I know a lot of people want Steelers to go after Eric Weddle because of the comments Mike Tomlin made, you know, early on in the season. But go back and look at the history of the Steelers in free agency on the defensive side of the ball, and whether or not they go after players 30 or over.
Yeah, I don't want a 30-year-old safety. I mean, I haven't watched enough of San Diego this year, and I like Weddle too, but I'm guaranteeing you he's not as fast as he was when he was at Utah when he was 23. So, you know, he's not the answer, period.
And he's starting to break down too. He's had groin issues this year. So that's not a good sign as far as he goes. So either you're going to go out in free agency and try to find another find like you did with Mitchell and hope that his first year, your new safety, and then you draft one, obviously, at some point. But, you know, the Steelers just don't draft safeties in the first round, right?
I'd be unlikely. I mean, look, you're really hoping. Okay, so then the corners, you know, it took an injury to get Antoine Blake off the field. You know, and again, look, the defense against the Broncos in the second half, they played well, no points. They only gave up 7 points in this one, and it was really directly those two plays, you know, were that drive, two big plays. you know, the pass down the sideline to Givens and then the pass to Juszczyk. There were better after the opening drives. But, you know, the corners, I'm bringing Cockrell back. He's a restricted free agent, right, Dave? So
exclusive right, exclusive. So he has to come back.
Okay, so he's back. You know, you're going to look, Cortez Allen's going to come back and be in camp and compete for a job. You got Sanquez Golson, and you probably have to sign William Gay. Although, you know, I'm not breaking the bank. So I think we talked about 2 years, $8-10 million, something like that. I don't know that I'm paying William Gay $8 million a year to play corner for me. So you got issues there too. I mean, they're talking about bringing, you know, Antoine Blake's one of your starters. I mean, obviously Mike Tomlin's in love with the guy. If somebody's in love with the guy in that defensive backfield, he is perplexed.
You got Doran Grant. We know absolutely really nothing about. In fact, don't forget this. Yep. Don't discount the fact that Doran Grant might end up being moved to safety during the offseason.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, look, he got cut too, right? So his contract's not—he's not under his rookie deal. What are his terms now?
Oh, he's a cheap minimum player that's under contract next season, and I mean he's under contract, so he'll be back. You know, Golson, we don't know anything about. Brandon Boykin's gone as can be. I will be shocked if they're able to re-sign Brandon Boykin.
Oh yeah, he's gone.
Antoine Blake, why? I have a funny feeling that he'll be back in camp, but
I do
but,
too.
I mean, why? I don't know why. Gay is your best, and he's pulling 30 on, you know, close to, you know, right at 30 here. So, you know, how much more can you get out of him? You know, and his Iron Man streak at some point, you know, like Ike Taylor, those wheels just start coming off there. So what are you going to do there, knowing that this team really doesn't draft corners in the first round either?
Yeah, well,
so,
I mean, you know, you can't draft every position in the first round. They're going to have to, you know, look, fortunately, they don't have tons of needs on the offensive side of the ball. They're going to have to go a lot of defense. Dave, let's go back to the game and get into a couple other things about this in terms of, look, the Steelers, I'm happy to say they got out-coached. They got out-coached in the first game in Pittsburgh. Harbaugh did a good job. He managed the clock better than the Steelers did. Obviously, the missed field goals were a huge, huge part of it. in terms of the Mike Tomlin being having lost to sub-500 teams seven of his last 11 games, what do you make of that? Because that is obviously a front-burner question for Steelers Nation right now.
Oh, there's a reason to be concerned. Why wouldn't there be? And people bring it up all the time and say, why do we give Mike Tomlin a pass? However, every time he loses one of those teams, it's the topic of conversation, right?
Absolutely.
So how is it a pass?
Well,
I mean, every time we talk about
I don't think any of us are – we don't give Mike Tomlin a pass. We're not going to fire Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. Look, the Ravens, they're not firing John Harbaugh, and he's 5-10. So – they're two of the better coaches in the NFL, period. Yeah, Tomlin's a great leader. Does he have flaws? Sure. I mean, you go through every coach in the league. Bill Belichick's guy went out and got the coin toss wrong. Somebody put him out there and didn't explain to him that you have three choices, not two choices, and what you need to choose is direction, not kick. It's reminiscent of Penn State that happened back in the 70s when Elliott Walker ended up having Pitt kick into the 30-mile-an-hour wind to open the game.
Well, wait a minute. Belichick, now, I don't know how much to believe about this, but Belichick said after the game that he did the right thing.
That who did?
That
Slater?
That the call, yeah, that Slater made the right call. Slater was just confused that he thought he also got to choose the direction.
Right. What you do is you tell the guy to pick the direction, right? You don't send him out there saying just kick. Just tell him because they
have... Well, Belichick said that was the orders, to kick.
Okay, I didn't hear that, so okay, fine.
And Belichick did that in 2013 against the Broncos in overtime.
Yeah.
Now there was wind involved in that game, okay, which really, you know, you could kind of see what was going on there. But Belichick defended the whole coin toss thing after the game.
Yeah, maybe he's defending his player, but, I mean, that's a dumb decision. I can't remember. Who's the quarterback at New England? They got that Brady guy?
Yeah, Tom something.
Thinking if I remember who he is, he's number 12. I think I might want to give him the ball rather than kick.
Boy, they just let the Jets march right down the field, too. So there's this big old there's this conspiracy now that Belichick looked up at the scoreboard, saw the Steelers lost, and did that on purpose in order to keep the Steelers out of the playoffs. There's actually an article on I think UMass website, that Massachusetts paper website, that Steeler fans up in arms, thinking that Belichick did that on purpose to keep Steelers out
Fantastic.
Of play. Out of play.
It keeps the world going around, things like that. So
indeed, people with those tinfoil hats, David.
Is there any reason the Steelers lose to 500 teams under Mike Tomlin, seemingly much more than they should? Is there? I don't have an answer to it. I'm sure Tomlin doesn't have an answer to it, or he would change things. Is there anything to say about it other than it happens?
I mean, people want to say can't get his guys up for the game. I don't know. Call it whatever you want.
Did you think there was a lack of effort? Like, here's one of the things.
I hate that, the lack of effort. Oh, they're not showing intensity.
Right.
They're not showing heart.
So
they're not.
The line, did they come out flat? I don't know what's flat mean. You heard me just rip the defense on for what happened in that opening drive. They were awful. But is that because – the Ravens had a good game plan and the Steelers' defensive game plan wasn't as good? Is it because the guys were still in the locker room? Unless you're, playing the game yourself, it's really hard to judge that stuff. I don't have the answer. Doesn't mean there isn't an answer. It's just I don't have it. And, rank speculation is not kind of what we proffer in as much maybe as some others. So I don't know that – I don't have a good answer to that. And if anybody does, feel free to email us and tell us what you think it is. We've heard a lot of opinions on it so far, but – yeah, it's a terrible loss, and yet, we're going to have to talk about the Browns in this game coming up at some point this week. There's still kind of like a 30% chance the Steelers make the playoffs. I mean, it's not – you think John Harbaugh had a good time beating the Steelers? How much fun do you think Rex Ryan's going to have trying to beat the Jets and knock them out of the playoffs? They are going to be get ready to go this weekend for sure, and if that happens, then the Steelers just have to beat the Browns. So it's not like there's no chance this team makes the playoffs.
They're not eliminated, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Root for the Bengals tonight.
I guess we should kind of outline everything that could go right the Steelers' way. Now, you obviously want these, if you're a Steelers fan, you probably want to root for the Bengals over the Broncos tonight.
You're definitely rooting for the Broncos because two Broncos losses to get them in.
Two losses to the Broncos or by the Broncos. Now, they close out the year against San Diego. And a win by the Steelers would get the Steelers in. Also, if the Steelers win and the Jets lose to the Bills, they can get in. I'm not going to buy playoff tickets or anything like that for sure, because you need help and you have nobody to blame but yourself. So now you better go out and just thoroughly destroy. We better see a team go out there and just thoroughly destroy Cleveland. As far as my overall thoughts, really on the game Sunday, David, this was how long have I talked about the Steelers defense? I mean, all season those people make fun of me in that ANY/A stat. It doesn't lie and it doesn't magically get better. And they've allowed top-rated and average quarterbacks to do what they want against them at certain times, and thank God for turnovers inside the Steelers' own 20-yard line, or else it would have probably been even worse. On the flip side, we talked about it at the top of the show. Roethlisberger was not on in a game where they needed him to be on because of the play of their defense and because of the slow movement, ball possession, and limited possessions by the Steelers, and he wasn't. And, I don't know. I don't buy the whole heart intensity get up. If you can't get up for a game in a national football, that's why I don't buy the whole trap game thing.
Yeah, you're right. We're on the same page on that. I don't think they're trap games in the NFL. You play 16. If you lost, there are other reasons you lost. It's the least likely reason is you're looking past your opponent. Did Carolina lose because they're looking past Atlanta? Whatever.
You want to tell me scheme? You want to tell me execution? You want to tell me clock management? You want to tell me any of the other factors? Injuries? Sure. But, if you have to question somebody's, you know, heart and drive and intensity in a game where they're paid, where their next year, no matter what their contract says, really isn't guaranteed, you know, I just don't buy it. College is a different story with the level of competition and all like that, and the quality of athletes from one program to the next. But
let me ask you a question about a game question again. The two timeouts. So obviously the Steelers would have liked to have those at the end. The first one, they were both used on third downs in the third quarter. On the first one, they get a first down, they score a touchdown on the drive. Probably justifies the use of the timeout, right? The second one, they get sacked and end up punting the ball. The Steelers, the whole game, Dave, it looked, Ben was, you know, it sounded like it was kind of loud there. It looked like Ben was constantly trying to get the Ravens defense to declare itself, and maybe they were doing a really good job of disguising things because he went late into the play clock a lot, and he went very little hurry up. That's one of the things that surprised me about what they did. So give me your two thoughts on that. Kind of not going hurry up as much, and Ben going late into the play clock, and then the use of the timeouts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to add to that other than it seems like your observations are correct. Now, let's face it. They got the ball back down three with 3 minutes left, right?
Plenty of time.
So yeah, I don't need those timeouts.
Not in that situation. Plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to have them. I mean, in the in-game scenario that was presented to us, those timeouts didn't mean anything. With three something, whatever it was, left. Plenty of time to march down the field if you make plays and get at least a field goal, if not the go-ahead score. Should they have gone hurry up more? Did they abandon the run too much in the second half?
You know, I don't have a great answer to that, but I think it's a fair question. I mean, you know, they made their living on the pass, so.
We'll have to, as far as, you know, defense declaring, you know, when the All 22 comes out, you know, we'll get a better look about that kind of stuff. But to me, it just a lot of it boiled down to Ben not wanting to be patient enough with underneath stuff, and you know, take what sometimes you just have to take what they give you and not force the football. Look, those two turnovers led to 10 points. They only scored 20 in the game.
Yeah, Steelers are 0-4 in games they didn't get turnovers. We've said it. You talk about the stat you like. I always say that if you're going to give me one thing, give me the turnover margin in the game, and I'll tell you who won, and I'll be right most of the time. Steelers lost this one. They, you know, I guess they turned it over three times technically or whatever on the last play. But huge deal. And like we said, Ben threw two, could have thrown four or five.
Starting field position for the Steelers was their own 19, whereas Baltimore was what, 33 for Baltimore. That sure is nice not having to start one time Baltimore started within their own 20, and that was their eighth possession of the game, which they took over, I think, 7-11 left in the third quarter, and they drove 12 plays, 45 yards, but ended up having to punt there. So what a huge drive maybe that was. You get them to start inside their own 13. They managed to get 45 yards on the drive. They end up punting. And where did the Steelers get the ball after that? It was late in the Steelers got it at their own 9. So what a flip of the field. Circle that possession of Baltimore's.
Yeah.
With 7-11, you get them to start for the first time in the game inside their own 20.
They chewed up some clock.
And they chewed up some clock, and they chewed up 45 yards, and then the end result was the Steelers getting the ball back at their own 9, if I've got my facts straight here.
All right, well, you know, we'll talk some more about this, and we'll have the press conference, and we'll, you know, take a cursory look at the Browns on Wednesday. But we got a lot going on, so rough loss yesterday.
The narrative would be one of those words out of a Batman fight, I think. Zowie, pow, kablooey, something. That's your narrative for the week. No, we're not. I know a lot of you want to fire Mike Tomlin, but No, we're not going there with that. All right, David, until Wednesday, we'll get a Browns beat writer in here to talk about the Browns game. People can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. They can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. They can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. They can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. I'm buying some time here. Stefan Rauscher, thank you for the donation. Terry Cousins, thank you for the donation. I think I hit the other people that donated. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate in the navigation bar there. Oh, David, I'm sad.
Rough one. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.